Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
Welcome to the Hollywood Casino Press Box with your hosts, Frank Cusimano and Martin Kilcoin.
Shooter from the belt to the plate. A swing and a miss, and that's the winner! That's the winner! A World Series winner for the Cardinals!
The best guests, the best insight.
Lofton with his team down by two, to the corner, Caputo! No good! And it's over! St. Louis is going dancing!
All backed by over 40 combined years of covering the biggest events in St. Louis sports.
Blues have the puck, Thomas off the wall, shoots, and it's in!
Let's
they
go.
Score! It's the St. Louisan, Pat Maroon! Bring out the Zamboni! Pat Maroon just put the city on his shoulders, and he saved them to the conference finals!
Now, here are Frank Cusimano and Martin Kilcoin on 590 The Fan KFNS and 590thefan.com.
Good morning and welcome, Hollywood Casino Press Box on the all-new 590 The Fan. Frank Cusimano with you until 12 o'clock. Martin will be here shortly. Got a good program lined up for you today. Bob Nightingale. Who better to talk to on trade deadline week than the great baseball writer from USA Today? Our opening monologue is brought to you by the great people at Worldwide Technology Raceway. The Indy cars are coming for a little trial run on Thursday. Hopefully, we'll be there broadcasting live. Let's begin with lap one. Hey, this just in. The Astros are really good. Cardinals are not playing the Reds and Pirates anymore. And maybe that's not a bad thing because it makes it more imperative for a move. Because, you know, I don't want to hear about Marcelo Zuna and Yadier Molina getting healthy being your trade deadline move. I don't want to hear that, folks. Neither of those two is going to pitch seven and give up two runs and strike out five. But first, let me say this. Jeff Luhnow, who I spent some time with on Saturday night, we saw each other at the stadium, we talked for a while, and he was a frequent guest on this program. He really is like the smartest guy in the room. Now, it helps that they tanked and they were like one of the worst franchises in baseball and they had that top pick a lot. They got Springer at 11, Bregman at 2, and Correa at 1. And maybe they were a little lucky when the 16-year-old 5'5" Jose Altuve showed up for a tryout after they told him not to show up.
Don't forget they missed on Chris Bryant and chose Mark Appel, so they could have Chris Bryant in there if they chose Correa in the first round.
Why? What a dilemma. Bregman and Bryant. But look at the middle of the order. And that's where you think, you're not just drafting well, you're making good moves. Michael Brantley, 2 years, $32 million, and the guy's hitting about .330 with power. And then the record-breaking Jordan Alvarez batting fourth. He was a trade with the Dodgers. They have the most wins in the American League for a reason. And think about it. Most everybody in their lineup is young and locked up for years and under control. Man, does he have a franchise. I know people gush about the Dodgers, but I tell you, the team we saw this weekend, Brian, aren't they frightening for years to come?
Yes, yes they are. The only question mark for them, I guess, would be their starting pitching with Gerrit Cole, a free agent this season, but offensively, they are set for a while.
Well, if you're Gerrit Cole, wouldn't you want to hang around? Have that shortstop behind you, that second baseman behind you?
You could, but you're due for a big payday this offseason.
Well, they should be able to afford them, shouldn't they?
They should.
Yeah. All right, Martin joins us now. How about just a quick overall view on when you look at that Astros lineup?
It's funny because Chris Correa is batting fifth. And the guy, though,
Carlos. Chris Correa.
I'm sorry.
With the Astros, I certainly understand.
I think Chris Correa is batting halfway house right now.
He had a little Houston tie-in.
Yes, he did.
Running in from a meeting, station business. But Correa batting fifth. But the guy that stood out, it's funny you were bringing him up, because I was looking at Michael Brantley and looking at his numbers, and I thought, you can't help it. They tanked, and they drafted some really good players. They tanked. They did. That's brutal. It's the way baseball's gone lately. But if they get Michael Brantley, that means they're just smarter than you.
Yeah.
That means they did their homework. And you look at his career numbers, it doesn't wow you. He's having a career year. But for some reason, they looked at him and said, he's the perfect fit for us.
And they got him for 2 years. Instead, I don't even want to be negative here, but
the money,
you know what I'm thinking.
Right. Well, the money they spent to get him and the money you've wasted on some other people.
Ugh.
I mean, that one stood out to me because you could say, well, it's not fair. They tanked and they got all these great players. Well, Michael Brantley was available to everyone.
Lap two. So who is available? Well, there's a guy in Cleveland named Trevor Bauer who leads the league in innings pitch, but he did something kind of strange yesterday.
And he is going to end Bauer's afternoon with that two-run single. And they take a 7-5 lead.
Well, Trevor Bauer, when he was taken out of the game, turned and I don't know where he threw that ball.
Well, I don't know. But I'll tell you one thing. I know one thing. This skipper is not happy with that.
I owe a sincere apology to all my teammates, my coaching staff, the organization, and all of our fans for how I conducted myself today. It was unbecoming. It was childish, unprofessional. It's no place for it in the game. Happy that it didn't result in any physical injury for anybody else. I realize I put people in danger. I want to be clear that my frustrations were with myself and my inability to stop the situation and keep my team in the game. It was not directed at any of my teammates, even though I know that it came off that way. I love going to battle with my guys every day, and today I feel like I really let them down, both personally and professionally.
You can live with that quirky personality and eccentric behavior with that arm. I'll take him in a heartbeat. But I got to tell you, Cleveland 62-43. They're a couple games out. This may be their last run. They got a couple of other starting pitchers not pitching right now. I mean, I don't know why they would trade him.
Well, that's what I don't get.
I think they're sick of his antics.
Well, and if there's a team as good as the Twins were, Cleveland is on their heels. Cleveland's nearly 20 games over 500. How can they trade a guy who's a top-end guy in their rotation unless it has little to do with baseball? Unless they're, if that may be his signature moment there, instead of striking out, what was it, 20 Cardinals a couple of years ago?
I mean, Corey Kluber's not pitching now. You're two games out. How do you give up that special talent?
I think that's
2.7 WAR, I think.
Isn't that the real challenge for Mozeliak and staff right now? Bumgarner, probably not available. Bauer, despite the antics, may not be available. But what I would say to Mozeliak, find another lackey. Meaning, nobody saw that move coming. Was anybody
a lackey?
Saying,
I thought he meant like a...
Well, no, he's got you, Martin. You're the lackey now for the Cardinals.
I thought it was DeWitt's lackey. Now I'm Mo's lackey. I kind of like that idea. But when they got John Lackey, it was two things. They were shaking up the clubhouse. They traded Alan Craig. They got rid of him. No offense, at the right time. And they traded Joe Kelly. It was to shake up the room. But John Lackey was this grizzled vet, came in and helped anchor a rotation. But nobody saw that coming. And that's what they need to do right now. We all talked about Stroman and Bumgarner and Bauer. Find another lackey. Somebody out there that you can pry loose that nobody's talking about. But that can come in and immediately improve your rotation.
So Bumgarner won a game yesterday. Giants have won 6 of his last 7 starts. Gave up 4 runs, but he went 7. He knows how to win big games, but how could San Francisco think about moving him when they go 18-5 this month? You want to give Bruce Bochy, I think, one more chance to win it. The Mets have two who could be available after the acquisition of Marcus Stroman, Zach Wheeler and Noah Syndergaard. Robbie Ray could be out there also. I don't know. You desperately need a starter. But you know, Martin, as soon as they make this phone call to inquire about these starters, the first names they ask for are Dylan Carlson and Nolan Gorman. This is going to be a real interesting 3 days for John Mozeliak.
Do you get a sense that they feel the fan frustration more than in the past, that there's certain angst out there, that they know if they just get some kind of middle reliever that most people have never heard of, that it'll be a collective either yawn, laugh, or outrage? Do you think they're aware of that?
And I don't think the Blue situation helped them.
They're winning it all.
Yeah.
But also, they were super aggressive before the season. Now, I realize Goldschmidt was a big addition, but we're talking a history here of deadline deals. Bringing in Scott Rolen and Mark McGwire in July, and then they added Will Clark was a late addition, Larry Walker. I mean, there's Cesar Cedeno for the older audience. This town is used to getting a piece that makes a difference.
Now, in his defense, I asked Walt Jocketty on Saturday, could you do now what you did then? He said, absolutely not. Just people don't do that.
Right, but I'm saying the expectation level of your fan base is do something. And even 5 years ago, it was John Lackey. 8 years ago was the Toronto trade. Now, Zepchinski and Dotel, there's not huge names, but they were huge pieces that they needed.
And they needed to shake up the locker room a little
bit. And
to
get Colby out.
Yeah. All right, lap three. So how will the Cardinals play this? Matt Carpenter still can't make contact. I mean, I think people are hoping for like a good swing and maybe some good contact. And then all of a sudden he reemerges as the 36 home run hitting all-star third baseman. Doesn't really happen like that. The entire season he didn't hit. Do you think after an injury and with August approaching that Matt Carpenter turns into Wade Boggs? Tommy Edman is just fine. He doesn't make errors and he has big moments. I think Marcelo Zuna has to play, but so does Tyler O'Neill. Tyler maybe moves to center and Dexter and Jose platoon and right. Or maybe it's three guys for two spots. Dexter, Jose, and Tyler for center field and right, and you're playing Ozuna every day in left. Jairo Munoz will play some outfield and some third and some second. Now, Martin, here's the interesting thing is Harrison Bader. Terrific guy, lots of tools, hope he can figure out, maybe a good player one day, but again, it's August or about to be. You're in first place. You can't experiment now. I mean, if Mike Schilt puts him in the lineup again, you really have to question Mike Schilt.
I think right now, the pressure's on the front office, not only to make a deadline deal, but also how they handle Carpenter and Bader. The front office sends Bader to Memphis. Mike Schilt doesn't send him to Memphis. That's on the front office. So this guy needs to play and get himself right. I would send Bader down. And with Carpenter, Schilt's not the one who calls him up and says he's now on the 25-man. That's on the front office. I only hope that they wait a little bit. The guy's 0 for 16 in Memphis and Springfield. He's 0 for 16 with six strikeouts facing minor league pitching. Now, Charlie and I were going back and forth the other night. He said, dude, he just faced a stud. All right, Friday night he faced a double-A stud. But it's still this is still a $20 million a year player, so yeah. I don't know that I can excuse it. I think the front office has to say to Matt, we're not quite ready to bring you. We just can't do it just yet. Munoz and Edmund, I realize their stats have flattened out a little bit, but nothing like what we've seen with Carpenter. You just got to hope it's not another Alan Craig because you got two more years at $20 million. If John Mozeliak were here with the lie detector on, I'm sure he would say that was terrible.
And, you know, I'm into this Tony Robbins and Norman Vincent Peale positive thinking. This is what Manager Schilt said yesterday about Bader. I think he's going to have a really good day. I mean, I like him pumping him up, but just, wow.
I don't think you're going to change Schilt and his approach, but
you have to take it out of his hands, and he's got to be in Memphis, and when Ozuna's activated, maybe Friday or Saturday.
I would even send him down sooner, maybe just the optics on it, too. Like, are we going for wins here, or are we just placating people? I think Bader's got to go down, and I think Carpenter's got to wait.
Lap four. The reunion of the 2004 team, arguably the most talented team the Cardinals have ever had. With the guys who were regular players, because we're not going to count Yachty, you had one legitimate Hall of Famer in Albert, and then you have all these guys that actually are considered. You know, that you think about Walker, Edmonds, Rowland, Reggie Sanders, 300-300 guy, Edgar Renteria, 2,300 hit, five All-Star games, Chris Carpenter won a Cy Young. Let's hear from two of the greats, Scott Rowland and Reggie Sanders. And Reggie thinks this was the best team he's ever played on.
As talented a group as you can possibly put out on a field. And, you know, we all became friends on and off the field, which doesn't happen all the time. Our wives all grew up together, became, you know, friends. And our kids, we were growing our kids at the same time. And it's just a special group.
I was very fortunate enough to play with some amazing teams. But I would probably say the 2004 the Cardinals probably was the number one team because, you know, you think of just, you know, even on the bench to everyday players, to the pitching staff, to the bullpen. I mean, we were relentless in not letting a team breathe. And so, which was, you know, for me, probably the most amazing.
David Solomon providing the sound from Saturday. Martin, I thought the most interesting thing, and you were down there with me, and I made sure that with my probably not in focus camera or bad lighting, I got this two shot of Rowland and La Russa. You couldn't help but notice those two together for about 15, 20 minutes. And Rowland said afterwards, you know, we've moved on. he's got another job, and I have other things, and we have our families, and you know, we've found mutual ground. It was kind of cool to see it.
It's a little surprising because I would have thought, and we've heard it in recent years, months. La Russa said it on this station, talked about it on the podcast, how those guys are actually friends now. I would not have guessed that. I would have pictured Roland being stubborn and kind of dug in on it. Because if I were him, I would have much rather ended the career here. Instead of going to Toronto and then finishing in Cincinnati, if I were him, I'd be kind of bummed that it happened. I think Mozeliak has said on the record that's the one move he really regrets, was trading Roland for Troy Gloss. But it's just a lot of fun to be around that group. You realize how many just personalities they had. I interviewed Ray King.
Oh,
remember, we used to talk
to
him.
He looked good,
all the time,
didn't he?
I interviewed Julian Tavares just because I got a kick out of him. He was always fun to have around. It was a great
team.
How
about Jason Marquis at 41, 20 pounds lighter than he once was
when
he played.
Looks like he's on the PGA Tour, doesn't he?
Yeah, and he said, he goes, I could go out there tonight and get people out. And he's going to pitch for Team Israel at age 41.
It was a really talented group. I love the shot that Wainwright tweeted out and said, forever thankful for this trade.
Yeah.
You got Ray King, Jason Marquis, and Wainwright in that deal with the Braves. Basically, you unloaded J.D. Drew, and I think maybe Eli Marrero, part
yes.
of that deal. But it was a really talented group. I know they didn't win the World Series, but my all-time favorite team was the 85 Cardinals, and they didn't win the World Series. So you can mock people when they celebrate a team that didn't win at all. And Rich Gould and I have these debates about, is there another reunion? But he said, I got to tell you, I don't mind this one because I really like that team.
Yeah.
And it was just personality. Woody Williams was a great guy. Larry Walker wasn't even there the other day. Just think of the star power.
A few people texted me, where was Mike Matheny? And I thought it probably would have been a little awkward at this soon.
Didn't they
and
extended
maybe he
the
does,
invite?
What's that?
Think they extended the invite to him?
Oh, I'm sure they
did. I do.
Yeah.
I think he would have been
everybody
invited.
On that team. If you're
you know,
catcher that out. Had the season he had, he's got to.
I think he would have been invited. If I were him, I would have gone to just the luncheon on Saturday. Even if I don't want to go back in the stadium and run into fans and the awkwardness of seeing Mo or seeing Schilt or whatever it would be. He should have, if he was in town, that luncheon, he would have loved it. Just former teammates hanging out. It really was a special group.
Walt said something kind of interesting. You know how we always say that the best job in life today is like a consultant or an advisor? You know, those that can't do advise. Well, that's what his job is now. He says it is the best ever. He says
he's the special advisor to the CEO.
Yeah. And then he said, like, that, remember the baseball guy, Bill Rigney? He was the longtime manager executive. He goes, oh, says, Rigney had the greatest job. He says, when I was coming up in the system, he goes, he'd have like three scotches before like 2 o'clock and go home and give a couple opinions. He says, that's the life.
Yeah. And I said to Walt, where do you spend most of your time? And he said, Arizona. But he said, I go to some series. I'll pop in. I'll hop on a road trip. And I'm like, isn't that the way? If you're the manager, you got to go to every single game. If you're the GM, you have to go to most of them. If you're the special advisor, like, what's the next road trip? Oh, you're going to Chicago? I'll meet you guys up in Chicago. Yeah, put me down for a room that weekend. I'll be in the suite that weekend. And then I'll come to Cincinnati in late August.
And his son Joey is with the Reds, and Arizona is the area that he scouts for. So perfect for Walt. All right, lap five. Plowsy, we are officially out of a series. Bosch is shooting season 6, but a long way away. Pretty Little Lies is over. Handmaid's is just once a week, so that's not enough. Need a series, open to suggestions, prefer thrills and maybe serial killers. Not really.
You've seen Boardwalk Empire?
No.
Oh, my God. Okay, there's one.
Prohibition
right now.
Era.
I am absolutely addicted to it.
Boardwalk Empire.
Yeah, Steve Buscemi, I think it is. Fantastic character. He just can play so many different roles. And I love the time period, too. In the 20s, everybody's wearing a nice suit. You got that weird lingo. I absolutely love it. Al Capone, kind of, they do a background
looks
of him.
Frank. For you, yes. Al Capone.
Yes. I know that.
How many seasons?
There's 5 or 6
oh,
seasons.
Good.
I'm on season
there.
2, and midway through season 2, and it is absolutely phenomenal, Frank.
Anybody watched it else?
It's one of those that my wife started when I was at work. So I would come home at night, and she'd be 3 episodes, 4 episodes in. So I never really got caught up because
really
she was
good.
Way ahead. But it's well done. And then that Michael Shannon, before he became pretty well known, the actor.
Yes.
Who's been in a ton of things since. Not that guy.
It's so
really
good, Frank. And you would absolutely love it. Right.
We started a new series last night, and I think it's called Sharp Objects. It's the Amy Adams.
I've seen the first season of that.
Okay,
I do
we
believe.
Just saw episode 1 last night.
Wait a minute, they did a TV series about it?
Well, it's, you know, she's a fictional reporter for the St. Louis newspaper goes back to her hometown in the Boot Heel of Missouri.
I've seen it. Yeah,
yeah,
seen
we talked about
great.
It. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, it's super creepy.
And it feels real Sixth Sense-ish, kind of creepy. But the opening scene, because I said this, my wife's sister recommended it. And I said, this sounds familiar. Amy Adams. And then she's a writer. I said, yes. I said, she's a St. Louis reporter. And then they show a shot of her leaving St. Louis to drive to the Boot Heel.
Yep.
This is in the first, 10 minutes of the show. There's a building that's falling apart, houses that are just decrepit, and then it shows the arch. It's, oh, my God. That's probably the only part of the show that was shot in St. Louis. It was probably Georgia or wherever. But this scene of her in her car, buildings just falling to pieces, and then you see the arch.
Hashtag our town.
All right, lap six. Stream of consciousness. In Quincy last night, Midwest Prospects
Humble
League.
Brag.
Yes, and Hannibal beat our Springfield squad, and I'm in the men's room, and guess what music popped up? Yes, they're playing Gloria after a victory for the Hannibal. I think they're called the Hannibal Gems. Unbelievable.
There might need to be a cease and desist from the Blues.
Yeah.
Did you start dancing just out of habit, Frank?
No, but Monique said, don't you love this song? I said, no, not when it's played here. This is our blues song.
So. Yeah, and it's okay. If Springfield had won, it would have been okay.
Yeah.
But wait a minute. Frank buried the lead. Monique went on a late-night road trip.
She did.
Yeah. That wasn't, the Cayman Islands or Cape Cod. She actually went to Quincy. Late-night food at a gas station?
No, but we did listen to a Nicholas Sparks novel on the way up. That's kind of what I go. Well, listen to what you want to do. So we listen to a Nicholas.
Oh, my.
That was part of the deal.
Yep.
Edited. Frank's like Mosaic here, cutting deals. Okay, how about if I throw in a Nicholas Sparks novel?
All right, a couple other quick things. Todd Gurley, one of the few Rams I actually like. Those reports are really troubling. 24, ACL repair, knee, has arthritis. He's going to be treated like an NBA player and rest, often as possible. Won't play in a preseason game. I hope he has a long career, but man, 24 with arthritis, that's scary. And nice to know that Brooks Koepka can win golf tournaments which are not majors. He won the St. Jude. I wonder, folks, all three of you here, I wonder if 10 years from now we'll be saying after Tiger, Jack, Arnie, Snead, and Hogan that this guy is right there as one of the all-time greats.
Is he 29? Right around 30? So Tiger was a little younger when he was exploding onto the scene.
Yeah.
This guy certainly built the last. I also thought it was notable that Rory kind of tanked. It seems like Rory's game, it's mental, don't you think? With Rory right now, can't play well on a Sunday.
Brooks is 29.
29. Okay. So maybe a little older in terms of racking up all these. But really, a couple of years ago, I think he'll be in that next conversation.
I think there's a wave of young kids now. Now, this is always what if you got to win as just as many majors as Brooks. But I think you got Colin Morikawa. You got, Matthew Wolf. You got these guys that are coming up in that next ring. They both have PGA Tour wins and a handful of starts. But, yeah, Koepka clearly going to be remembered as the guy who is dominant at majors. And I think what's good about this one is there was a story that came out that he showed up, I think, a half hour or 45 minutes before the final round started. Didn't get any work in. Shot a 65.
Yeah, I think he was under the weather sick or something. Had the flu.
He did no work.
Flu.
Just got there a half hour. Before
As opposed to like Tiger in one of those tournaments, he had to get up at 3 a.m. to get his body. Wow, that's unbelievable.
What happened to Jordan Spieth? Isn't that the name we thought that was
putting,
yeah,
baby.
No, he's done better. He did well at the British Open.
But didn't you think he was just going to take over and start
winning
everything?
Yeah, he had a stretch there. But he'll reemerge. Mm-hmm. He and Justin Thomas will come back. All right, let's take a short time out. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Bob Nightingale. By the way, our opening monologue is brought to you by our great friends at Worldwide Technology Raceway. Go to their website, find out about the Bomberito 500. Bomberito 500 is sponsored by John and Frank Bomberito. They've been around for a long time. Frank Bomberito started it, Oldsmobile dealership, and John has made it into an empire. 20 new car locations, 9 pre-owned car locations. If you're looking for a car, look no further than bomberito.com. We'll be right back.